Sonia Feldhoff.
Weekdays from 1
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
How do we know, with all the responsibilities that teachers have in our schools these days, and hello to all the teachers listening because you're hopefully enjoying some great school holidays at the moment, but we know that teachers have a fair load on their shoulders, teaching pretty dense curricula, curriculum and all of those sorts of things. But when it comes to being inclusive in this day and age where we've got students in our classes in mainstream, and I think many people support this idea of differing abilities. How do teachers tailor a class that can meet all of those differing abilities? We were contacted by a teacher, a man who's in his early to mid-30s, who says he teaches in a mainstream class a whole range of kids with differing abilities. And that requires him modifying the classes that he has to suit the abilities of sometimes several individual kids within his class, which he's very happy to do. But he raised the question, he said, when I went through, it's not teachers' college these days, is it? But when he went through his teaching degree, there was not one component of it that gave him any overview of what disabilities there might be or differing abilities there might be and how to modify a class to do that. So what resources are there nowadays? Has it changed? I presume he was studying maybe 10, 12 years ago. Have things changed in the last decade? What support is there available to teachers as far as preparing them to need to be inclusive in this means? And is it enough? In a moment, we'll speak with Dr. Kate De Bruin from Monash University. But first, let's introduce Dash Taylor-Johnson. He's the Vice President of the Australian Education Union. Dash, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to be with you. Have things changed in the way teachers are prepared for what is a new paradigm in the way they have to teach these days?
Look, what has changed is just our world. I mean, you can talk about our developments in a whole range of areas, and education is the same. Perhaps it could be moving more quickly, but there is a greater level of preparedness now for basically graduate teachers to move into the workforce. But that's only one part. I mean, a critical aspect is their professional experience. That would be called the teacher practicum. There are a lot of students, and in some cases there's not quite enough places to meet all their needs, but the quality of that experience really makes a difference, and we would advocate strongly for a diverse experience that gives that opportunity to, you know, to work with the range of abilities that is now an expectation. I mean, as people, we're not the same. And if we were, it'd be pretty dull. And as learners, we're not the same either.
Well, this teacher says at no point did he know anything or was taught anything about things like dyslexia or autism or any of the other conditions that are now apparent in some of the children he's teaching within that class. And as he's very willing and open to do this, but says there was, you know, in his studies to be a teacher, nothing prepared him for that.
And again, that's where the importance of the difference between theory and practice comes into play.
Yeah.
And look, there's limited opportunities. There is a probably a real notion that you learn as you go. And I know that students are certainly very keen to have that level of experience and you know, to have that breadth. I guess a concern that the AAU would have is that some of the experiences that students are getting are sanitised to a degree, and if they end up then teaching in a system where that doesn't replicate what they've done, then they can be shocked a little and they'll need more support.
So Dash, can I just clarify that? Because this teacher who studied however many years ago says he got no training at all. Is there training now within the degree course, or at least some reference to what these conditions are and what extra skills or that they might require?
I would say that it would be very reckless to not include, you know, awareness that you've got a range of learning abilities. And look, they can be classified in terms of identified, you know, dyslexia, people on the autism spectrum. And look, and they're quite commonly
But is it in
now.
The course?
I don't teach the course, so you'd need to ask the university lecturers. And we're currently working with them about the practicum component and maximising the effectiveness of that in preparing people for what they might expect when they get to a classroom setting, with the expectation that it's highly likely that you're going to have a whole range of learners with differing needs in those classes.
Let's bring into this then Dr. Kate De Bruin. She's a lecturer and researcher in inclusive education at Monash University. She runs professional development in schools and is also a former high school teacher herself, as well as a parent. So she comes at this from lots of different angles. And she's also on the Academic Advisory Committee for All Means, the Australian Alliance for Inclusive Education. Dr. Kate De Bruin, good afternoon.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Before we go into sort of what the help is available, have we seen over the last decade or so changes to what student teachers are learning as far as the breadth of abilities that might be present in their classes?
Yes, we absolutely have. In fact, there's been some really important recent changes since the professional standards for teachers came into being. So all university courses are now accredited against how well they teach to those standards. So every graduate has to be able to provide evidence that they can, you know, that they know about and have some skill development in each of those areas. And three of them make really specific reference to disabilities. So all teacher graduates are now prepared against those.
And so they would learn how to not only prepare a class or a lesson, they would learn how to modify that plan to cope with those different abilities.
So that's a really big question.
Is it?
So okay. One, yes. So one of the
Dash is nodding too. So obviously, I'm not a teacher.
Okay. So one of the teaching standards that they need to be able to demonstrate is that they can differentiate across the full range of abilities.
Right.
So what that really means is, if you're running a literacy activity in the class, are you able to cater to a wide range of abilities within that? For example.
Right.
So, yes, teachers are absolutely prepared to do that now, and that is, across every university in the country.
So when we talk about teachers getting together lesson plans and that sort of thing, yes. I know that was always difficult in the past, but it's incredibly complex, even more so nowadays, when you're considering how they would have to modify those plans, possibly several different times, depending on the abilities within the makeup of the class.
If that were the approach they were to take, yes, that would. That's not how we prepare our graduates or and in the professional learning that I run for teachers. And actually, one of the fantastic approaches that we teach was recommended by the Senate last year when they wrote a report relating to students with disabilities. And so we talk about creating universally designed curriculum. So if you think about the way universally designed buildings work,
yes.
rather than retrofitting ramps around the back next to the dumpster where it's not really very accessible, but, you know, it means people who are wheelchair users can get in, they plan new buildings so that they are accessible by a range of people from the beginning. And so the same set of design principles are used in designing lessons and curriculum. So we think about how can we create our lesson in a way that can be that can engage students in a range of ways, that students can access in a range of ways, instead of creating a lesson and then creating a modified version.
Okay, so you would create a lesson plan that has several ways of attacking it. So that's you only do it once.
That's correct.
Ah, okay. Is that I'm just got a text from someone who, despite the example that that's prompted this discussion, says that they learned or they trained 18 years ago, the secondary school teacher, and training and awareness read the diversity was part of my degree at Flinders University, says Marianne. So this has been around in some capacity for some people for some time, it sounds like, Kate. Are we getting better at it, do you think?
I think we're getting better at being more consistent. So big shout out to a teacher who trained at the same time as I did.
Yeah.
What we know that back then, it wasn't consistent around the country. So we know that there were some shining examples of universities that were preparing teachers brilliantly for this and that there were some graduates who weren't getting as much exposure to sort of how to do this and why. So I believe that we've got much better at doing this consistently. That's a big change.
Yeah, cool. One of our texters says there is a training in the course. You also have required training on disability support to refresh each year. A lot is on job learning based on communication with carers and support staff, because not every student with a certain disability is the same. And I think, Dash, that was the point you were raising, is that you do learn things in theory, or you can learn things in theory, but the practical, putting that into place practically is quite different, as far as you need to bring in the experience there as well.
And to extend on what Dr. De Bruin was saying as well, I mean, as an individual, you are getting that instruction. When you get into the school setting, something that the AU would thinks is really valuable is the opportunity to work with your colleagues and to do some shared planning, particularly in settings where you might share the same cohort. And I know there's distinctions between junior primary, primary and secondary, but that opportunity as a colleague to share your knowledge and to grow. And you know, the point about the Australian standards is significant, because you have now a series of graduates who are in some ways knowing the language of education. You know, they can articulate that more clearly than perhaps their more experienced teaching colleagues who may have been in the system for possibly over 20 years or longer. I mean, it is a workforce that has that range of age and experience. And so there's a great way you can learn together. You can take some of the teaching knowledge over time with some of the current academic knowledge and language, and you can meld those. And together you actually have then commonality and consistency then of how to actually manage and support that range of learners. Mm. And we want to support the diverse learners most particularly.
Dr. De Bruin, when we're talking about this, you say that this has now come into the teaching of those who want to become teachers. Yeah. But along the way, and one texter has pointed out that all teachers have to do additional hours of professional development over every 3 years, I think, is it?
It is in South Australia, that's right.
Yes. So are we doing enough along the way? Is there enough support along the way to help learn these things? You're very involved in this, so are we doing enough?
Look, you know, I'm really passionate about professional learning for teachers, and I think that Dash raised a really important point, that some of that professional learning actually happens in the, you know, in the staff room when teachers support each other. But in addition to that, there's a really important role for professional learning to be conducted in ways that, you know, support teachers to address what they've identified that they need. So each state still has different provisions relating to this, and I was checking up to make sure I was across the information for South Australia. So every 3 years, teachers need to demonstrate that they've done 60 hours of professional learning. And there's an impressive array of places they can get that support. And in fact, the department, the South Australian Education Department, have an amazing sort of special education resource unit that you can just ring up, and there's a qualified teacher on the other end of the phone who can answer your questions. You can drop in. Parents and teachers can drop in if they can get there physically, and they also run workshops.
Kate, what's the role of education support officers or school support officers? I'm not sure what the exact title is these days. I think both are interchangeable, aren't they?
Well, yes, so there's a range of terms that are used. So supports in classrooms provided by education assistants, teachers' aides, integration aides and so forth. The role of those people is not to assume responsibility for the students who have the additional need and the disability. They're often paid out of the funding that is provided by a student with a disability, but it's the teacher who's the qualified teacher in the room.
So a support officer would guide them through, if I'm understanding this correctly, guide them through what the teacher is directing. Is that right?
They can provide a range of support, so they might be clarifying teacher instructions, but they're not there to be sort of Velcroed to the child with a disability. In fact, we know that that can often work inadvertently. It can work against the inclusion of that student. So it's really important that teaching assistants are used by teachers in ways that aren't simply to, shift the responsibility for that student's learning. So teaching assistants can, in fact, be supporting other students in the room while the teacher is supporting the student with the disability.
Ah, right. Okay, yes.
So the teaching assistant is there to support the teacher in a classroom where there are students with disabilities.
Okay. Because I'm sure that's something that perhaps people don't understand that well.
Yes, and in fact, in the UK, they've poured money into teaching assistants and then done an enormous evaluation. And they found that it wasn't the presence of a teaching assistant, it was how that teaching assistant was asked to work that makes the big difference. So there were times, in fact, when having a teaching assistant working with a student worked against that student's own progress. But that's not always the case. Teaching assistants do incredibly valuable work supporting our teachers and our classrooms and our students. So it's important, I think, that teachers are actually trained and educated in how to collaborate well with teaching assistants.
Mm. So when it comes to these teaching and education support officers, Dash, they're not the ones who have to have the specialised knowledge as such.
No, that's right. Although, that said, they often do. These are often staff members who've spent an incredible amount of time with a student. They bring a very rich knowledge about what that student can do or is feeling anxious about. So they bring a wealth of important knowledge to the teaching team that they work in.
Mm. Dash, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, there's another layer as well, and there's the in-class support that's been identified. There's also a system-level support. And look, that system-level support are the group who will give particular advice around behaviour. They'll give advice around how best to meet the needs of a student with a disability.
Is that department-based?
That is department-based. And look, the AAU believes, you know, they're stretched very thin. They do a great job, but they're simply not enough to go around. And one of the frustrations that teachers experience is they identify that there's a student with need, but they haven't been officially identified with that need through the correct channels, so they then don't generate any funds. Now, this year in the most recent enterprise agreement, we were able to negotiate a students with learning difficulties grant that every school got some money to try and cater for those students who haven't really slipped through the gaps. They just haven't been able to access them. So we're advocating for that to be extended, and also the services around that to be extended through the school partnership level. And that will be a way to then support if it goes hand in hand with allowing teachers an opportunity to access professional learning and to access each other's knowledge. And I guess the other point I'd make on the professional learning is it's a pretty busy space, and the demand, like complexities in classrooms, is ever increasing. Likewise, the professional learning opportunities are ever increasing, and sometimes people go, well, which one do I think is going to be more valuable for me? But certainly no shortage of opportunity, but how do you access that? How do you prioritise that? Is it an individual choice? Is it something that's actually a school-based choice, or is it a system-wide choice?
We're talking here on ABC Radio Adelaide about whether our teachers in Australia, but more specifically here in South Australia, are prepared for inclusive education. My guest in the studio is Dash Taylor-Johnson from the Australian Education Union. We also have on the phone Dr. Kate De Bruin from Monash University. She's a lecturer and researcher in inclusive education and also a former high school teacher. Kate, if I can ask you now, though, then, as we hear about what is available, maybe given your perspective, what could be done better? What gaps do we still need to fill on this front to make sure that children of all abilities are getting their needs met as much of the time as possible?
Yeah, look, I love the way you phrase that, because it's children with a range of needs. And so there are students who have all sorts of additional needs that don't have a disability and will never qualify for funding. And those students need to have their needs met as well. And I think one of the hugely important shifts that's happened and has the power to make the kind of changes that will support students better is the nationally consistent collection of data for students with disabilities, because it shifts the conversation away from whether there's a diagnosis and, you know, whether there's money to support the child, to what are this child's support needs and how can we meet them. And it sort of flips the conversation around, and it's going to make, I believe, a really powerful difference to all students. So the other thing that I'd add, which, I mean, Dash made a really important point about how professional learning is accessed and targeted, is I'm hoping that when teachers are asked to think about the students in their class and the needs that they have and the adjustments that are required, that will then help make a strong case for what professional learning teachers of that child might need.
Yeah. One of the texts says, this is a good discussion. The rising costs of education are due to the need to provide support to classroom teachers for students with learning disabilities and surprise IT. Community expectations for inclusion is driving the former. I think we only had to look at recent comments by Pauline Hanson and the reaction that followed that to know that there are people within the community who wonder or question whether inclusiveness and inclusive education is the direction that we should be heading. Kate, can I ask you to just comment on that?
You sure can. So the evidence is really clear that, by and large, the outcomes for students who with disabilities who get educated with their peers in, you know, the local school are better. And similarly, there are advantages for the students who don't have a disability. So there's decades and decades of research to show that inclusion is the better option. There are obviously a small number of students for whom parents choose a specialised setting for different reasons, and that's their choice, and there are times when that's highly appropriate. And that was, again, highlighted by the Senate report. But the evidence is clear that inclusion is the preferable option for the majority of students.
One of our texters, though, says this: as you do as a parent, I asked my son how his teacher was going. His reaction was, she's okay, but she can't teach because she's spending so much time with X, a child with a disability. This person says this was coming from a 9-year-old who could see a problem within the system. How do you address it? Where to give more to one who perhaps requires it, others don't lose out?
Yeah, look, that's a challenge, and I'm sure Dash will have strong opinions about this as well. If I draw on my own experience as a teacher, I know that I didn't go into a classroom, let's say I had 28 kids in my class, they didn't each get a 28th of my time. That wasn't ever how a classroom ran. There are students who are more talkative than others, there are students who are quieter, there are some who are more self-motivated, there are some who require, you know, more assistance. And that's classrooms. It obviously, a classroom where a student is interfering with the learning of other students is a classroom where there's some support that's needed. But again, some really important research that's come out of the UK suggests that actually students with disabilities are getting less of their teachers' time. So I think it's problematic to say that that's a generalisation, that kids with disabilities take up more of their teachers' time, because the evidence suggests that actually the presence of kids with disabilities in a classroom can make a teacher more adept, it can make them more highly skilled, it can make them more responsive to student needs. So I think that when teachers or students in this case, tell stories about teacher time not being, being able to be accessed by other students, that's indicative that there's a need for perhaps some classroom support or some teacher professional learning.
And is it one of those sort of health-related questions, Dash, you know, like the health system, there will never be enough money for the health system? Will we never have quite enough money for the support officers and extra help that teachers need in relation to these things?
Look, there's always areas of need, and I think it would be remiss of us to consider that we may in fact be in some utopian world. I mean, it's not. It is a world of reality. For the parent who is having a discussion about their child's education with them, that is fantastic. I'd also encourage them to have that conversation with the teacher and talk more about what is happening in the class. I certainly concur with Dr. De Bruin's assessments that inclusive education is enriching for everyone.
So even those with what we'd consider full abilities?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It is about how you develop as a person. It's about how you learn to interact with others. It's about respect. It is about, being, I guess, aware of your own abilities and others' abilities, and how that doesn't necessarily have to limit you in one way, but it may in fact be a benefit in another. And certainly, for those students who have been identified as being part of the autism spectrum, you know, their abilities in some areas are astounding. You know, and there are other areas that, you know, for many people, they feel they're the basis. They're not quite as adept. And so we're teaching people about what it means to be a person as well as a learner.
Yeah. Paul, good afternoon.
Yes, good day. How are you?
Yeah, very well.
Look, I'm getting really purple listening to all these people with all their, you know, fantastic ideas. I work in the industry, and they're lumping children as disabled or disability aware or something like this, and they're all saying they've all got the same disability, effectively. They're not talking about those that have got temper issues, those that have got other sort of issues that have come from areas in the school there. They used to get one-on-one attention, and now they're getting attention 28-1. They are disruptive to the class, some of these students, and the teacher just can't cope. They're lumping everything all in the one basket, and it's just not right.
So you're a teacher yourself, Paul, are you?
I'm not saying a word as to that because it could get me in trouble. Okay? I'm speaking out. There's only one person that spoke with any sense there, and that was the union guy, but they don't do enough. Okay? The stress and mental health issues I have seen in my people around me, they've just gone downhill. Okay? None of them are surviving past 55 because it's just got too hard. Things like a lesson plan used to do them for 3-4 years before it changed. Now a lesson plan will change 3-4 times in a year. Okay? On the run. Learning technology. IT. Keeping up with everything. They just can't do it. And then throw into the mix a child with autism, and let's get this straight. A lot of children with autism don't sit in a disability scale. If you've got Asperger's, you don't count for anything. Okay?
All right, Rick, I can hear you're very passionate about this. Let's see what our guests have to say on this. Dr. Kate De Bruyne, if I can go to you first. Now, I think a lot of teachers would agree there seems to be a lot on their plate, that they have a lot to deal with as far as fitting things in, and the stress levels are fairly high. How would you address what Rick has to say?
You know, that sounds like somebody talking about teacher stress levels, which I agree, you know, our teachers do a magnificent job and they're asked to do a lot. So it sounds to me as if there were a few issues that were identified. One of them was, it sounds as if there's been a withdrawal of one-on-one support in possibly the context this teacher's talking about. Another was students with what he called temper, so perhaps emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
And another was students with autism. I'm not entirely clear how to respond to some of them. So students with sort of temper issues probably would never have been supported with one-on-one.
That's behavioural issues, really, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we teach is called positive behaviour support. But again, the teacher's suggested that, or this the caller has suggested that he would have, or his context would have, multiple professional learning needs, and fitting them all in, as well as turning on a dime while teaching, is challenging, and it is. So, you know, the work is challenging. Teachers' work is challenging, and it's really important that they're able to access support within the school from the staff and as well as outside to reduce those stress levels and skill the teachers up.
Mm. Well, interesting, though, when we've got Paul's view, and he was obviously very passionate about it, but then I've got a texter who says it may be possible that teachers that make the effort to improve their ability to teach those with a learning disability become better teachers overall. Your guest beat me to it. All students benefit, says this one. Another texter says, I would have loved to have the support needed when I was in school, disability recognised by the doctors and the lawyers, but the school refused to acknowledge it. So we've come a long way in that sense. Thank you. Dash, did you want to make a comment on that one?
Yeah, I did. And thank you, Paul, for calling in. Look, a couple of things that I picked up on there is, look, in terms of support, the external support in a behaviour coach might be something you want to access. We don't believe there are enough. We don't believe that the needs in our school system are being met. But that is the system-wide support that is available. In terms of, you know, how you can cater and support all learners, it's interesting to note that Paul identified that the AAU's not quite doing enough, but currently, and I would counter that, currently we're in ongoing discussions about improving support services, you know, through behaviour coaches and, you know, disability-focused support. We're also in discussions around an extension of what's called an independent education plan. Currently, that is a one-on plan for every student who has an identified disability. Now, the department are talking to us about what's called a one plan, and this is for every learner, right? And if there is an identified disability, that's part of that one plan. But the intent, and it has been trialled in SA, and we're talking about, you know, how do we move that forward across our system to support all learners. The general idea is that you start basically when you enrol at a school, and it is an ongoing record of learning need. And of course, your achievements are reported through the current system. But that is a way that you can have a continuum of learning where things don't get lost going from even a year two to year three or change of teacher or even a change from primary to secondary location. So there are things happening, Paul, and they're going to continue to happen as long as the AU is here, which is going to be for a long time.
Thank you for that, Dash. On our phone line, Rick rang in, says he trained as a teacher in the early 1980s, and it's not true that they weren't educated in diversity, but the theme was all about social disadvantage rather than individual disadvantage, and there is still a crossover, says Rick. Another caller says that often a lot of extra paperwork and planning is required on top of everything else that teachers are already doing. I think that's true across all life, sadly. The bureaucracy seems amazing. And Margaret is a retired teacher. She wants to say how excellent our teachers are in supporting all children, including very gifted children. When schools for disabled children were disbanded, teachers found it very difficult as buildings weren't modified for those with physical disabilities and created a great deal more work. So she feels that there's been a big change on that score. And Hilton on our text line says, as a former school teacher, I taught blind students in the same class as abled students, senior economics. All did well, and if we are to have an inclusive society, we need to start with our education system. By the way, the issue that kept all students behind was a lack of funding to provide the resources for teachers to teach with, things like textbooks and photocopiers and papers and things like that. Another person just wanted to raise the issue about SSOs, that they can be diploma trained and quite often have already had experience working in preschool and childcare and after-school care and special needs, so they can be a very important addition to help teachers in the classroom, which I think Kate was highlighting before. If I can thank both our guests, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but very much appreciate it. Good to know, though, that a lot of our teachers are being prepared and required to continually improve their skills every 3 years in areas like this. Thanks for your time, Dash.
You're welcome.
Dash Taylor-Johnson, the Vice President of the Australian Education Union, and also Kate De Bruin, Dr. Kate De Bruin, the lecturer and researcher in inclusive education at Monash University. Thank you for your time as well.
ABC Radio Adelaide, 891 AM, digital radio and the ABC Radio app.